What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Managing Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Hello, Sherlyn. Welcome to CES. How's it going for you?
It's incredible. Everyone keeps asking me how many steps I've taken, and I'm like, they've all been mental steps and leaps, you know? And so I've been chained to a laptop.
Yeah.
But
you have not been stepping that much. You've been editing stories and everything.
Not as much. I still managed to make it to the show. I had a few demos and briefings and stuff. And then as I go to those places, I quickly scour whatever show floor I'm in. So, you know, not bad. I'm exhausted, but doing better than I expected.
Awesome. That's good to hear. We are recording this Thursday, January 8th. So this is the tail end of CES for us. We have judged our awards, which we'll talk about in this episode. And also, you had a chat with the Pebble CEO, right?
Yes.
What is his name exactly?
That's Eric Mijakovsky, or if you want to make the bad pun, Mijawatchsky.
That's a long
walk. It's a struggle. It's a reach. It's a big reach,
to make that. So you had a great chat with him, too, which we recorded right before this. So that's going to be available at the end of this discussion. I just want to sit down and see how CES is going for you. We'll talk about some of our best of things and any other trends we want to call out. Mm-hmm. So as always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. We'll be back with our live stream next week, hopefully, Thursday mornings, typically around 10:30 a.m. Eastern. So I had a good chat with Dan Cooper about the initial trend we saw, which is the sorry state of the PC industry. Mm. Go back and listen to that, folks, because Dan has a lot of thoughts. He's written about Intel quite a bit. And it certainly does not look great for the TV industry or for the PC industry. I will say one thing I have noticed is that this will likely be a good year for the TV industry because there's a bunch of new technology that is becoming more accessible and looking really impressive, specifically the micro RGB sets that are coming from a whole bunch of companies. We talked about this in the CES preview, but I got to see them now. I saw LG's, Samsung's, a whole bunch of companies. They look great. They have incredible colors. So this is basically mini LED with a better backlight setup that supports more color. So the colors look rich and natural. I still think OLED looks better. For me, the TV of the year and probably the product of the year at the show is LG's wallpaper TV, which is something when I walked into their demo space and I saw this just like pencil thin TV just hanging in the middle of the air. It brought to mind like all the stuff sci-fi I grew up watching, just like having like invisible, practically transparent displays. It just looks so cool. It's going to be insanely expensive. We don't have pricing yet, but that is something that if I had the money, I would want a 77-inch version of that on my wall like immediately. It would just look amazing. Has anything really jumped out at you, Sherlyn?
I don't know if you talked about this on the last episode. Maybe not. The Lego Smart Brick Smart Play.
Yeah.
Jumped out at me because for Lego's first CES press conference, I think I'm sure they've been here in some sort of stealth capacity in the past, but like, it's a fun product to throw out there, but it's also controversial in a way that like, people are like, Legos are good enough, why add technology into them? I can see that argument, I mostly agree with it, but the thing is, this is additive, not, like, you don't subtract from like existing Lego bricks, you can still use your old school Lego bricks. This is just for people who want the sensors and the speakers and whatever. So I thought it was cool to see them at CES. I mean, Legos are hugely popular.
We should take a step back. Let's describe that product. That is the Lego Smart Brick, which Nathan Ingram wrote up. And spoiler, it won our Best in Show. Like, that is our favorite device we saw at the show, too. We have a whole bunch of things we will just, like, talk about, but I think in general, like, it's part of their Smart Play initiative. These are blocks that are not app connected. There's no like AI in there. They just have little processors. They can communicate with each other when you put one next to each other. It just lets you build really cool things. So I'd recommend go check out a couple of videos of that. I agree. It looks really cool. Mm-hmm. Lego has had Technics before, which was their like really complicated technical blocks for adults and older kids. This is not that. This is going back to the original Lego blocks, kids will be able to play with this. And it just looks, it looks purely creative too, which is very much in their style. That's what Lego tends to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree. This is one of the most impressive things here.
It's also, and I mentioned Lego as like, I think we're all kind of weary CES reporters at the Engadget team. Most of us are. I mean, we've got some fresher CES attendees, and they're very, it's such a good energy to the team. But the other, like, it's something like that that's not the usual CES fare, and I think that's partly why it stands out. It's colorful, it's fun, it's nostalgic. And I think the other thing that stood out to me, another Best of CES award winner for us, is the IKEA Matter Smart Home compatible, mm-hmm. Matter compatible smart home devices. I think what stood out for us here is that there's like an affordability aspect to the gadgets that IKEA is bringing to CES and to like the mass market. I can tell y'all more about it, or I can go on to talk about other stuff that jumped out at CES. I don't know, but I'm going to actually just pivot into what I think might be my personal best of CES. I honestly can't decide, but like I'm going to say it. I think the L'Oreal LED/infrared light mask really stood out to me. Mm-hmm. I think we didn't really end up awarding it anything because we all think there might be a bit more room for it to become a more mature product before we give it any award. I think the product I'm talking about is L'Oreal's LED face mask or LED eye mask. They have two products.
You describe them as face slugs, which I think is very
describe them as face slugs. It is one of our team, Matt Smith or Aaron Supporters.
They do look like face slugs.
Face slugs. These are the LED eye masks. Mm-hmm. So they're shaped in your typical sort of almost tadpole slug-shaped piece that go under your under eyes. Mm-hmm. And but the difference between them and other LED masks on the market is that they're made of this sort of flexible skin-like material and they're transparent. So like give me any transparent tech that looks wild, I'll slap it on my face and it'll look wild. I love the flexibility of it because it makes it, you know, more likely to hug to the contours of your face regardless of your face shape.
And is this for anti-wrinkle stuff? What is this for?
Yeah, so red light therapy is used mostly in the beauty and skincare space as for like what they call reduction of fine lines, uneven skin tone, in general like rejuvenation, so maybe some brightening. I think the efficacy of it all has to depend on like how much strength is in the light and how good the stuff is. And then there's also infrared here, I think, that's being used, and that's got its own other impact, but like mostly like in, I think it's mostly in heat generation that helps there.
Do we have a picture of you wearing these?
We do, and they're on coming to the website soon.
Okay.
I've just been putting off writing that up because I just haven't had time. I've largely been on the live blog, which you can go and read. And on Monday, it was like the main live vlog and about 17 other live vlogs at once, which was fun. But yeah, no, the L'Oreal thing, there's the face slug version and the full face version, which the full face version is what stands out to me because like...
Is it a full face gel mask?
Yeah, full face flexible skin-like mask. Yeah.
Okay.
It's really cool because like you strap it on and there's a button on the on your top right corner of your forehead. There's like a module there, which is where the, I think the battery pack and the general like processor type things are. There's a button that you press on there. So that also distinguishes it from other LED masks on the market, which are hard masks, rigid. And they usually have like a wire attached to a power unit with the controls and possibly a touch screen. And that's just a bit unwieldy. Whereas this one, the whole thing's on your face. And it's strapped to the back of your face like a head wrap, rather than like these Vision Pro like straps that, you know, don't distribute the weight very evenly. In this case, there's better weight distribution, but there's not that much weight to begin with. And it's potentially more effective because the lights are closer to your face. I'm a bit dubious around those claims, but that's
cool.
There's just a lot of technology in here that I'm very fascinated by.
We have a history of you wearing freaky LED face mask. The background of our Trello board for Best of CES is just Trillin in the murder mask is what we call it. I have one of these things like a long time ago too when I first started. And it is, they're annoying because you can't really do anything else. And it's like you have, your eyes can look out, but it's so bright. You're actually sometimes better off just closing your eyes.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you have migraines, if you have like issues around light sensitivity, that stuff can be too harsh. So the newer things, the face slugs where it's not like blinding light on you, I could see that being pretty useful.
Yeah, or if you have a targeted concern. I think our editor-in-chief, Aaron Supporters, said that, you know, you might not want to use a full-face situation, but an under-eye one might be, you know, more interesting to him.
We all stare at screens too much, so there's we need a lot of, like, anti-screen body modification stuff happening. I think that's what we're seeing here. I'm going to quickly run down the list of our best FCS winners, and we have a variety of categories. The cool thing is we used to be a little more restricted in terms of the categories we could talk about, and now we make our own rules. we make the law over
that,
here.
That brings about its own problems, to be honest.
But we have a variety of categories, some that you'd recognize and some that we have made just because the product looks really cool, and we really wanted to recognize them somehow. So I'm just going to go from the top here. So again, the LEGO Smart Play Smart Brick System, that won our Best or Show. We're calling that Best Toy. Let me see here. In terms of laptops, we really like Lenovo's Legion Pro rollable concept. This is a laptop screen that can expand into widescreen and even extra wide, so like ultra wide, sort of like the opposite of the vertical extension technology they showed off recently. This extends horizontally. So that's kind of cool. I know Sam was a big fan of the Samsung Galaxy Trifold. That's our best mobile. That's the triple fold Samsung phone.
It folds twice.
Oh, yeah,
like
yeah.
Triple panel, I guess.
But yes, it folds twice. You're right. We've been debating this thing for a while for best outdoor tech, the Whisper Aerotone T1 Quiet Leaf Blower. I believe it is a leaf blower that works at like 50 decibels, which is not very loud compared to other leaf blowers.
You can have a conversation while that's on. That's what they're saying.
Yeah. I feel like Billy and I are probably going to fight about who reviews that thing, but that's cool because I hate leaf blowers, but I have to use them. So that's a thing. Best gaming device, the Asus ROG Zephyrus Duo, which is another Duo computer from Asus with two screens. Now the screens are like on top of each other. I don't know how this thing folds down, but it looks kind of cool. For health, we really like the iBot Vision Test Booth. Is this one you covered, Trillin?
I did take the vision test, and the sell here is that there's a shortage of eye doctors, especially for people who live in rural areas that need to drive hours to see an eye doctor. This helps sort of spread out the access to vision care. Mm-hmm. And we need to be very careful with using the word vision as opposed to eye, because it can't detect things like cataracts. I mean, it might be able to, but it's not meant to. It will just give you sort of a prescription for lenses. But, you know, should you need that, you can walk into or drive to your nearby Walmart or Sam's Club. I mean, that's kind of where iBot is trying to place its kiosks and booths. Mm-hmm. So I did one in a matter of minutes. Like 3 minutes, I was done, and I got my prescription.
That's cool.
About 20-ish minutes after in my email.
And a lot of people need glasses prescriptions, and they don't get them.
Before the test I did here at CES 2026, my last eye test was 20 years ago.
Wow. Okay. But you don't wear glasses regularly.
I had LASIK, which did ask in the process of doing the eye test, like, have you had these corrective?
Good.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So...
But yeah, it's one of those things. I have to go every couple of years because just to buy new glasses, sometimes they don't let you buy them without that. So anyway, this looks cool. I wrote up something. There was an app or something that was like doing vision testing years ago.
Yeah.
I wrote it up for Engadget, and that was fairly accurate, but I feel like this one's better.
Yes.
Best PC or laptop, the XPS 14 and 16. The XPS is back. Dan and I talked about that in the last episode. Hooray for the XPS.
Yay.
Not hooray for the price increase, which starts at $2,050 for the XPS 14. That should be a sub-$1,500 computer, but that is why the PC industry is going to be in a really bad place this year. So I'll be writing about all that, too. Definitely check out that episode with Dan, because we had a good conversation around that. Best robot, the SwitchBot Onero. We didn't quite figure out how that's pronounced, but it is a house robot that can help you around the home, I believe. That seems cool. Carissa Bell liked that from what we saw. Best home theater product, the Samsung HW QS90H soundbar. Billy Steele really liked it because it has better bass. I believe the woofers are on the top and bottom now, so you can get really good bass without a subwoofer. Best TV, the LG wallpaper. Again, love it. Best AI hardware, the subtle voice buds I mentioned in the last episode. Mm. They're really cool. I'm looking forward to testing those and reviewing it, and I hope that company like makes this happen. Best audio product, the Shox OpenFit Pro. Billy has been testing these for a while. These are open ear headphones that also have like a bit of noise canceling, which is kind of cool. And best accessibility, the WheelMove Power Assist for manual wheelchairs. This is a really cool product that basically connects to the front of a manual wheelchair and turns it into a powered wheelchair. That it just looks so cool. I'm surprised nobody did this or something like this before. We also have best product for a pending category, I guess. I don't know.
It's emerging tech.
Emerging tech. Matt Smith brought up the IXI autofocus lenses, which I'm surprised they're here because I wrote these folks up back in September. And this is a company that has developed smart glasses technology that puts LCD lenses like right on the lens of glasses, basically for people who need bifocals or varifocal lenses or any of those sorts of things. So this is something everybody will actually need as they get older. If you have young eyes or healthy eyes, you probably don't quite understand that yet. But yeah, it can switch to different vision types, so you're not just like looking at different sides of your glasses to read text and see in far distances. The lens itself will like adapt to what you're looking at because there's a bit of eye tracking in there too. So that's a really cool product. They are on, like, I think something is going to be made in this year. We'll see. We're going to keep an eye on that. And I also feel like nobody's talking about this company. IXI, the autofocus lenses are really cool. Any takeaways from the best of or from the show for you, Sherilyn?
I always like our team's selection of winners because it I think represents us well as a team. We're all here. We're gadget nerds, so you're going to see the best of the best in tech. So like tech-specific, tech-impressive things will make our awards, but we're also people who care about good. We care about tech for good. So you'll see like the Engadget team in particular, I think, cares a lot about accessibility, sustainability, things that will make you smile. So we've got a lot of cute robots in our lists often. And then, you know, the leaf blower is the thing that makes you smile from having peace in your home. Because from what I heard in our, you know, chat, people like this not just because of, you know, your own homes and yard maintenance, but also if you might buy one for your neighbor whose loud leaf blower pisses you off every morning. So you could give them the whisper tone, super quiet leaf blower.
It is very expensive. For them. So I don't know about that, but yes.
Well, it's, you know, an idea. What price would you pay for your sanity, Devintra? Yeah. Anyway, I so that's what I really have to take away. And you know, the Lego Smart Play or the Smart Break system is the best in show, and I think that also speaks to our team's vibes for the year. We're all looking for a bit of joy, a little bit of play, and the fun in gadgets again. So that's me. Like I want to thank everyone for following our CES coverage so far, but I mostly want to thank our team for working as hard as we have this whole entire week. Everyone.
Well, I also want to thank you for your organizational prowess.
I hope it's been good. I hope it's helped.
You've been like on the ball, Sherilyn, and also on the live stream and stuck in our little, you know, writing space for a while. So everybody clap for Sherilyn. Aww. And also great to have Sherilyn on the podcast. Check out some of our video stuff. We've been sending stuff to TikTok. We have stuff, a few things on YouTube, I believe, or certainly
we have stuff on YouTube, YouTube Shorts, Instagrams, where we've been posting a lot as well.
We had one thing go viral, right? What was that?
It was that wheelchair assistive device, and 1.6 million views as of right now on our Instagram reels, and some more on TikTok. So I think not only, I thought on Instagram reels it was just because a couple of people shared it and those were maybe like somewhat famous people, I don't know. But it's also doing well on TikTok. So this device is just resonating.
It's cool. It's
people.
A really cool idea that we have not really seen before. And that's a good sign that hopefully this thing will find its fit in the market or something. Check out my TikToks. I put up a couple of things. Well, we're reposting stuff from all of our reporters. I keep forgetting about YouTube Shorts, but I just got to upload some things there.
It's an often overlooked.
Yeah. YouTube still exists. It's still very much a thing. And yeah, I guess cheers to another CES. And let's wrap up this conversation with a conversation with Pebble. You talked with Eric Mijakovsky, the CEO, about the revival of the Pebble watches, and also something I was a little skeptical about, the Pebble ring. What is that called?
The Index 01.
The Index 01 ring. Pebble made a smart ring that has a bit of AI in it, and again, we have been skeptical of so many AI devices. But this thing, basic pitch is, it's a ring that you never have to charge because the battery life is like 2 years. If you need more after that, you can get it replaced. Did they say anything about paying for that?
Yes, you'd have to pay.
You have to pay to recycle it.
But yeah. The idea is that you pay $75 in 2 years, depending on your use. Mm-hmm. And if you're still using it in 2 years, you'd probably want to use it some more.
And it's a ring with a button, and you hit the button, and it records your thoughts. That's all it does.
So simple.
That's all it does. So if you're the person that sort of is always trying to jot down ideas via text, via Evernote or whatever, you can just wear this thing and always have that. It's a cool concept, and I think you guys had a good chat. Anything else you want to say about your chat with Eric, Sherilyn?
I wish we could have talked forever, basically, because I think he's a fascinating founder in the space. It's just very realistic about what he wants to do. in this industry.
Also really full circle, because I remember when he was here at CES pitching the very first Pebble watches, yep. and there was a lot of excitement about it then. And that was really early on the smartwatch like market. Everybody was excited, but we didn't quite know what they would be. And now it's like, okay, some people like smartwatches, but mainly it's people who really want something like an Apple Watch or fitness people who want to track their health data.
Yep.
And I think bringing back the Pebble brand seems kind of cool. I'd probably pick one up just for fun.
Yes.
But, you know, e-paper watches that you don't have to charge very much that do really basic tasks and can still talk to your AI assistants whenever you need to, like they will have microphones and stuff, that seems useful. So anyway, here's Sherlyn's chat with Eric from Pebble.
So yeah, here I am at CES 2026 in a hotel room with our podcast teams, Devendra, and Pebble founder, Eric Mijakovsky. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This is Thursday?
Thursday,
January 9th. Wow. It is all a blur where it's like all of our too many days here in Las Vegas, but I wanted our podcast audience to be able to hear you and I have a chat. Basically a version of the same chat we had when we met earlier this week to talk about the Pebble round and the Pebble Index 01. Am I using the right name for
yes.
them?
Yes, okay. So I call it 01.
01, okay.
Yeah, the index feels more 01. Circular ring-like.
Oh, one. But no, I want to preface all of this by saying that like in our conversation earlier this week, I just found like your approach to you know having a gadget business in this day and age to be a sensible one, and I just wanted everyone to hear from you. But first, before we get into all of that, tell me about why you're here at CES.
Kind of like a homecoming.
Is it?
Yeah, I think I first came to CES in 2010. Mm-hmm. That was before Pebble. We were still making a watch called Impulse. A BlackBerry smartwatch. Were you at CES in 2010?
No.
No?
I don't think I was in America in 2010, but yeah. BlackBerry so watch, go on.
My claim to fame at that point was breaking into the Engadget trailer to get coverage, not to steal something. Because we were nobodies at the time. It was nothing. We didn't even have a CES badge. We were like sneaking around the unbadged area.
Yeah.
And at that time, all the news folks had these trailers in the center of the parking lot. One of the doors was open.
Yes.
We walked in.
That is our own security error, not your breaking in. So I blame former
Engadget. And we got an article out of it. There's an Engadget article from 2010 talking about the BlackBerry smartwatch.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so you're here now, homecoming, again. No longer breaking into places, hopefully.
16 years later.
16 years, wow.
I know. It's crazy. No, it feels great. So for the first time ever, we had a booth on the floor at CES. And so we got the chance to talk to hundreds of Pebble fans, Pebble users, people who had never heard of Pebble.
Mm-hmm.
We had a big banner at the top that said, Pebble's back.
Yeah.
And that's the subtext for this entire thing. Something that people loved
comes
back.
Yes.
It's a very rare, I think, story or experience in the tech world. Like normally when a gadget goes away, people mourn it and they, you know, say RIP.
Forever, right.
Doesn't come back. And so in this case, it comes back not only with new hardware, but as an open source kind of force. It feels, you know, sustainable. It feels long term. It feels like this is going to be around long into the future.
I want to get into kind of how Pebble was able to come back a little bit, because we talked about this earlier this week, and I want to be able to talk about that a bit on this episode. But I'm curious what you think of CES now, because this CES in particular, we have like so many AI devices. And I think I had mentioned this to other people, but I think the Index 01 is its own unique type of AI wearable. What do you think of those that are out there, and how does the Index 01 compare or fit in?
Well, there was an AI penguin right behind us that kept squeaking. And I will say, regardless of how good the product is, just because it squeaked for the whole week, I probably will never buy that AI penguin.
Right.
So, except for the AI penguin, I think everything, you know, was good.
Yeah.
It's great to see. I think things this year were a lot more grounded. Mm-hmm. I didn't get too much time. You spent way more. I, you know, read some articles and saw. But I feel like a lot of the products were grounded in utility, providing value. I think there was a couple of years ago, this spirit of, we don't know exactly what AI, you know, can offer, but we're going to integrate it everywhere. And now we see a lot more devices that are providing direct value, a lot of translation, a lot of transcription, a lot of products for the deaf or for the hard of hearing. You know, it's great. I think there's tons of ways that these new technologies can kind of be embedded in our lives that provide, you know, specific value. Mm-hmm. Index 01 is one of those things. Like we built this for a very specific reason.
Yeah.
I wanted to solve a personal problem. I forget things.
So do I.
And I wanted some way to be able to remember them. Mm-hmm. So we built a ring that has a button and a microphone. You press the button, talk into it, and it remembers. And yeah, it does one thing really well. Mm. You don't have to charge it. It's water resistant. You could wear it in the shower. I use it maybe 5 to 10 times per day to just remember things like, you know, adding things to a shopping list or remembering to get back to share or remembering to do something for my kids. Yeah. It's kind of like a memory prosthetic, something that just makes my memory better.
Yeah.
I've been wearing it now for 6 months.
Okay.
And there's no way that I can go back. It has become like muscle memory.
Yeah.
And I don't take it off. It just sits on my index finger.
Yeah.
Press the button, talk into it. It's the first gadget since the AirPods that has really become part of my, you know, everyday
routine.
Carry.
Yeah.
Everyday routine, exactly.
I mean, I love the idea of AI as this sort of secondary brain, this sort of external memory thing I've seen you use on Pebble's marketing material. But I think there's so much competition. I think there's the Plot Note Pin. There's like Bee's wearable that was recently acquired by Amazon. Those are wearables that pin to your clothes or are necklaces and whatever. But I do think that the ring idea, it's way more likely to stay on your person over time. And I've written about this, but I want to say to your face that I think you've really thought about the friction of it all and really seem to want to reduce the amount of friction in someone wearing this all the time. Because you and I, when we were talking about this, you said the second someone has to put it on to charge, put it down to charge, you just reduce the likelihood they'll pick it back up again by quite a lot. So can you talk about the friction part of this and how you sought to solve it?
Yeah, for me, incorporating a new gadget into my life. I love gadgets, like
yes.
I told you before. I love reading gadget blogs. I love reading about gadgets. I love kind of fantasizing them. I love the expectation of like reading about them at CES
right.
and then like ordering them. I ordered some new headphones that I heard about, and I'm just, you know, anticipating, you know, getting it. Mm-hmm. There's it, for me, like that's part of the
unboxing it.
Unboxing it, yeah. And then like thinking about, you know, is it good? Is it bad? Showing it off.
Yes.
You know, taking it out at dinner.
Yes.
But not all of them make it past that
yeah.
stage.
Right.
And I mean, I'm sure for you especially, right, you get the chance to
so
touch
many
and
abandoned
feel.
Products, yeah.
Yeah, and for me, I've tried so many different gadgets that don't become part of my life that I think I've learned a lot about, for me especially, like what are the things that I value and what are the things that, well, when you're making a gadget or when you're using a gadget, you're always evaluating it based on, you know, the positive column, which is what is the benefit that it brings to my life? And then the negative column, which is like, what are the friction points that cause it to be like annoying?
Yeah.
And so those have to add up dramatically to the side of this is beneficial
right.
or else you just don't use it.
Yeah.
You return it. I return a lot of gadgets.
Yeah.
And so for me, that comes down to this like math equation where you have to have it, like the gadget has to have a raison d'etre, it has to have a reason to exist, and then it has to do a good job at that reason.
Yes.
And then you have, you know, all these deficiencies or problems or friction points, and these could be cost, these could be how often you have to charge it, size, fashion, look, feel, compatibility, which devices does it work with, you know, the ecosystem, does it work with other things that I use? And so for Index, we thought about that like crazy, not for any sort of like greedy purpose of how many units could we sell
right.
or whatever. Thought about it for ourselves.
Yeah.
And for me specifically, because I was, you know, the first person to wear it. And so in the positive column, like what benefit does it bring? It's very specific. So you mentioned some of these other listening devices. I tried some of them, but honestly, I just don't have the problem that most of them are trying to solve. Like
right.
I'm not a reporter. I sit in front of my computer most of the day, and I don't. I've tried using meeting recording software. I generally don't. I take notes into Notion. That's just my habit.
Okay.
And then the rest of my life, albeit fun, is not the most interesting thing. Like, there's just not that much signal in the noise of my normal day.
That's
and so
nice.
I've never fantasized or needed to record all of the audio from my day. And so things like the bee and the, you know, the other wearables that, that record my whole life just never seemed that interesting thing. I mean, I tried them and explored them, but, you know, looking back at the, like, a, you know, they have these feeds which show you all your life, and I'm like, okay, great, but, like, I'm not going to go back 10 years and look at, you know, the transcript or whatever. What happens during my day, though, is I get ideas or I remember things, especially while I'm out. Like, when I'm in front of my computer, I have, you know, Gmail open, I have my beeper messaging open, and I can kind of do everything I want instantly. Though I do have Notion open in another page where I could just jot things down. But when I'm out, when I'm away from my computer, I'm with my kids, I'm bike riding, I'm shopping, I'm, you know, on transit. And those are, ironically, the times when I get some of my best ideas. Or I remember really important things. Like, this happens all the time when I'm driving. Like, you know, I distinctly remember many experiences where I'm driving, and, you know, I have my phone in the holder or whatever, and I could do the voice command, but, like, first of all, I'm driving. Second of all, the voice command doesn't always work for, like, take a note. And so I would resort to really ridiculous things. Like, I would repeat the idea back to myself over and over again, like, kind of like a mantra. Like in, you know, the movie Memento, where he's, like, repeating the same things. Like, that's what I did in order to not remember the idea. And then I'd get to the off-ramp from the highway. And then, like, the second I get off, I pull over and I, like, write it down because I needed to do it. Or if my wife was sitting in the passenger seat, I would ask her to text me.
Oh my God.
Like, Eric, you know that this is ridiculous. And so this is the impetus for Index 01. It's the idea that, you know, in a hands-free manner, like, well, one-handed manner, you can just at any point in your life press your thumb down your index finger, talk into your ring, and it remembers. And for me, that takes a weight off my shoulders. Like, my brain feels like it's not running in circles. Like, I'm just the type of person that really likes lists.
I mean, I also love that idea. I can't wait to try it out when these are available. And I had the same issue where, like, in the middle of the night, I was trying to, I was in bed. I had a CES thing I needed to do before I came here. And I was like, Siri this, Siri that. And it just refused to do the right thing. And then,
and it's trying to do it,
it
now.
You're now
just doing it on your desk.
And because it couldn't make a note that was sophisticated enough to help me remember the time I, at the time I needed to do it, I just had to text my boyfriend and be like, ignore this message, but I'm just trying to remind myself to tell my boss that, like, this. And then the next day he's like, don't forget to pester your boss about that. Like, you know, and it's just like, I, that's why I'm like, definitely, I could see the use case. I could see myself being, like, someone that wears Index 01 to bed and, like, has these, or, like, we talked about in the shower where
shower
people have
thoughts.
Shower thoughts. Exactly. So I really like the use case. I do have, like, there was one part of the cell here, and this will be the last thing I want to say about Index before we move on to watches, but, like, the one part of the cell that was concerning to me, we also did talk about this, was that at the end of sort of the battery life, like, with 1 month left to go, the app will say, hey, you've got, you know, about 1 month left of juice. You can either send it in for recycling or, and we'll send you a new one if you should desire to continue, right? Like, it, there is a sort of environmental or, like, sustainability concern about this. Do you have sort of a solution in the works for that? Or is that something you've thought about and think is okay or something, you know?
So this is a good kind of segue from the equation that I was describing, right? The positives and then the friction points. And so we talked about what the opportunity is and what problem it is and kind of who it's for. Then there's, you know, for any product, there's constraints. There's things that govern, you know, the size, the shape, the cost, the battery life, you know, the charging
Which
frequency.
Which is like about 2 years, right? If depending on your
use.
Yeah,
and so under kind of normal usage, if you're using it 5 to 10, 15 times per day, Index 01 will last for about 2 years, that, which means that for those 2 years, you don't have to think about charging. You don't even have to take it off. It just becomes part of your habit in a way that pretty much no other electronics can really do. It becomes this passive extension of yourself. And that's a really new concept. I don't know if I've heard of any consumer electronics
that doesn't
or
need to be charged.
AirTags. AirTags are probably the closest, right?
Same thing,
Like, you know, you buy an AirTag, you put in a battery, and then it lasts for 6 months or something like that. Right. It's not too long. Or you lose it.
Right. You can't find them, even though you try to find them. Yeah.
And so other than that, there's not too many kind of electronics that work like this. And, you know, many people have looked at Index 01 and learned about it and have some opinions. Mm. And we, you know, want to make sure that everyone knows that we did design this on purpose. Like, we mm-hmm. thought deliberately about every decision that yeah. governed and came into this product. And we thought about making it rechargeable.
Yeah.
And we thought about making, you know, it, you know, we thought of everything.
User replaceable or something.
Yeah, we thought of pretty much every option. Right. And we decided to do this because we felt like it provided the most seamless kind of usability experience for people like me and for, you know, people that are, you know, looking for this feature set. Mm. What's interesting is that this category didn't really exist before we announced it. There was no, you know, real concept of a memory device that was always with you. There was these Plaid devices and, you know, things that would kind of like record your meetings, but there's nothing that was trying to track these high signal moments during your day. Mm. Anyway, so getting onto the kind of battery life topic. Mm. For me, I knew that this device was all about reducing friction. Mm-hmm. Any little kind of, what do you call them, paper cuts
right.
would contribute.
Death by a thousand tiny paper
yeah,
cuts.
Yeah, would contribute to me not wearing it. Mm. And so for me, I use it 5 to 10 times per day. That's not that much if you spread that over yeah. you know, an 18-hour day. It's a couple key moments. But I knew that if the ring was not on my finger for that moment, it would kind of lose its value.
Yeah.
Similar to how if you use Siri or Google Home or something like that, and it works 80% of the time
yep.
or 85% of the time,
yep.
those times that it doesn't work contribute to you not using it the other 85%
right.
of the time. And so yep. I've talked to people who have Aura rings, and they say, oh yeah, I have an Aura ring. And I'm like, well, it's not in your finger. It's like, oh yeah, well, I was charging it a week ago, and I guess I just haven't put it back on.
Yeah.
And so while it's still useful and it provides value, mm-hmm. that friction point causes the whole system mm-hmm. to fail.
Yes.
So we thought about that. Mm-hmm. Then we thought about, you know, what if we made it rechargeable? What if, you know, there's a couple, we learned this from watches, there's a couple charge points that make sense. There's daily
overnight,
charging,
right.
which is overnight, you know, mm-hmm. put it on your thing in the morning, take it off, kind of, that's one cycle. Mm-hmm. There's nothing really until a week. You mm-hmm. can't really have 2 or 3 day battery life.
Yes.
It's kind of useless because, like, what are you going to do? Charge it every other day?
Exactly.
You know, are you going to remember that it's the every day? You end up charging it every night.
Yeah.
Then there's once a week. Mm-hmm. Once a week is like, you know, I'm, you know, it's the weekend, you know, I'm having a long shower, you know, I put it on the charger, take it off.
Right.
You know, a week kind of makes sense. Then you've got Kindle, which is
like
coupled
almost
like
a month. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's the next kind of, there's no point in, like, you know,
yeah, you charge it when it runs out, basically.
3 weeks,
yeah,
exactly. You charge it when it runs out.
Yeah.
And then you have longer than that. Mm-hmm. What is really longer than that?
Not really anything.
There's not that much. And so when we were looking at options, we didn't want to make it 1 day because then you can't get to sleep. Mm-hmm. We didn't really want to make it 1 week because, well, we didn't have to. There's no. The next kind of chunk for us could be several months. Mm. What happens after several months? If you have a custom charger for a ring that you only charge once a month.
I've forgotten where I've put it, yeah.
I've forgotten where you put it. So what are you going to do? Buy another one off Amazon?
No, I'll just never charge it again.
Or you'll just never charge
yeah.
it again. Yeah, so we thought about this. Mm. And we decided that that wasn't the product that we wanted to make.
Yeah.
We didn't want to make a product that you'd either lose the charger or you just don't put back on your finger the
yeah.
moment that you take it off to charge for that once every 3 months period.
Yeah.
And so then we, you know, bit the bullet and said, we're just going to make this not chargeable.
Yeah.
We're going to make it something that lasts, you know, effectively for a couple years.
Yeah.
And so along with that decision comes a couple things. We switched from rechargeable batteries to non-rechargeable batteries. One of the benefits of not using rechargeable batteries is you don't get battery swell.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you have a rechargeable device, there's these cycles where the battery becomes smaller and bigger, mm-hmm. smaller and bigger. And this is a ring. This is something that's like physically on your body,
yes.
you know, all the time. Mm-hmm. Unlike a smartwatch, which you can just kind of take off, or AirPods, you know, you can take off. This is enclosed around your finger.
Yeah.
And you want to be careful about what you do with that. And
yeah.
so, you know, we've noticed in the past that, you know, rechargeable batteries do sometimes have these problems.
The swelling.
They can
yeah.
swell. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, one of the reasons why we decided not to put a rechargeable battery in this product,
yeah.
or at least not a large rechargeable battery.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned kind of the recycling aspect of it. So after 2 years, you send it back to us, you recycle it.
Mm.
The ring is like by weight 90% stainless steel. Mm-hmm. So it's super rechargeable, recyclable. You just unclip it. And we looked at doing interchangeable or replaceable batteries. The ring is sealed to make it water resistant so that you can take it in the shower. And the only way that we could do it in a kind of effective small package was by kind of gluing the stainless steel halves. So there's an inner stainless steel piece and an outer stainless steel piece, and we had to glue it at the factory. And so, yeah, finally, what I would say is that it's $75.
Well, early bird pricing, right? Because I see that after a while it goes to $99.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So right now it's $75.
It's $75, yeah. And that was also important. Like, a ring is something that, you know, gets a little beat up.
Yeah.
It's something that you might misplace. It's right. Something that it's wearable. It's like, it is, you know, unlike any other piece of electronics that you have, it takes a little bit more of a beating.
Yeah.
And these things, you know, are designed to last, but they're not designed to last forever. It's, you know, a first, it's a, you know, one of the first times that you're wearing technology kind of on your body.
Yeah.
And so that factored into the whole, remember the kind of second side of the equation?
Yeah.
We wanted to make sure that people could try it out and see if it was right for them. And anytime you kind of add more technology or complexity, it becomes more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not sure that this is a product that will be right for you, we wanted to give you the chance to just
opt out.
Try it and opt out. but if you wanted to just try it and see what it felt like, it's $75. It's not the biggest commitment. I'm not saying this nothing, but it's not like the largest commitment that you have to make. And we looked at some of the other smart rings that are going for $350,
$500. The Aura is around $399, but it's a very different product, but yeah.
But it would be the similar technology, like if you're building, you know, a rechargeable kind of like, you know, that type of product.
Right. It would jack up the price to a bit more, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about the business model we talked about for Pebble. But before I get into that, I want to talk a little bit about the watches. Specifically Pebble Round 2. We got hands-on with it here at CES. Oh my gosh, I'm so in love with
This is an audio podcast. Don't make people too jealous.
They will get to go to Engadget.com to look at our hands-on for the pictures. But if you are if you remember the Pebble Time Round from how many years ago now?
10 years.
10 years ago.
2015.
Oh gosh, if you were in that era of being a gadget lover in the 2010s, you may have a very soft spot for Pebble watches, and I think the Pebble Time Round was one of my first major reviews, and I just had such a great time with it. It was so beautiful. It looked so nice. And so when I picked up the Pebble Round 2 and I put it on earlier this week, it was so thin, so light. The bands that were attached to some of the units here were very narrow, which is kind of the style that I like, and it speaks to me in a way. But what I think stood out for me in our time together was the fact that you were very realistic about who this watch is for. You're not trying to be an Apple Watch replacement. You're not trying to be a Samsung or Google Watch competitor.
Or Garmin.
Yeah. Or Garmin, right? It could be a Garmin because of the sort of reflective, e-inkish, e-paperish screen. But it's not. It's for fun, it feels like. And that really stuck with me because we also saw a unit here with the Nyan Cat animated on the screen.
I just downloaded a Cookie Monster watch face. So every minute, God, the Cookie Monster eats the time.
Our listeners can't see this, but my jaw just dropped. Tell me more about, why and
so how a gadget for me, as I kind of mentioned earlier, is, you know, I love gadgets. And
do you also love Engadget?
I do love Engadget, yes. Don't worry, I love gadgets and Engadget. Long-time reader, first-time, you know, talker.
Talker.
And part of the reason why I love gadgets is they make me smile. And, you know, I want more things in my life that make me smile. And, yeah, they cost money. And, yeah, but, I don't know. I don't spend money on too many other things. And so this is kind of my habit.
Yeah, it's your...
I love buying and, trying and experimenting and playing with gadgets.
Your problem is, your addiction or something.
I do have a little bit of addiction. I mean, yes, if you look at my desk at home and the number of headphones and earbuds I have
you only, I will say for our podcast audience, you only have two ears. I will confirm. And how many headphones do you have?
Oh, I mean, it would be scary. I think, I mean, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I'm imagining all of them. I probably have 40 or 50 pairs of earbuds.
Like of earbuds.
You know, Bluetooth.
Right, right. Not over ears.
I have a pair of knockoff
AirPods Max.
AirPods Maxes. Have you tried them? It's like $80 and they are indistinguishable.
The ones that you're talking about, I have not tried, but I have tried AirPods Max and I do want them in my life, but yeah. I'm down to do a dupe. Anyway.
So I have a lot of these. I don't know. Mm. But you know, getting back to your point about round two.
Yes.
Pebbles round two.
Yes.
It was definitely designed as a product that can spark a little joy. Mm. You know, you could look down at your wrist and just smile. There's 15,000 apps and watch faces on the Pebble App Store.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are weird. A lot of them are fun. A lot of them are quirky.
Yeah.
And you can just browse through and every day, every hour, switch your watch face and you'll never be done.
Yeah. Wow. Tell me a bit more also, you discussed this earlier this week, how you were able to use Pebble OS again, that I think Google...
Open sourced it.
What was it? When did they do that again? September, October?
January. So Google...
This January?
Last year.
A whole year ago.
Google bought Fitbit,
yes.
Which bought Pebble.
Yeah.
And so by the transitive property of acquisitions, Google owned Pebble. Yeah. Now, they weren't doing much with it. So a couple years ago, a year and a half ago, I very politely asked some people within Google if they wouldn't mind open sourcing Pebble's OS.
Yeah.
It was just sitting there. And, you know, there was a community that had formed around Pebble. Mm. And I, you know, made the case that this would be a fun, creative, positive way to kind of give back to the community. And Google said yes. And we're forever thankful for them because they sparked this entire relaunch. I would never have fathomed building Pebbles again because the software is such an integral part of it. You can build all the hardware you want, but without that beautiful, fun, you know, quirky OS,
yes,
it wouldn't be the same. And I knew that if I built new watches that look like this, without that software, I would know, personally, I would feel and I would know that it wasn't the same.
Yeah.
And I would just spend my whole time pining for, you know, what we'd built.
Yeah.
And we could have built it from scratch, like rebuilt it pixel by pixel. It would have taken a lot of time.
Yeah.
It would have taken a lot of money and would have kind of been a lot of like waiting for it to be as good as I remembered it.
Right.
And so Google, you know, through their generosity, put it back into the world. They posted it on GitHub, and it's freely available for anyone to download. We've been continuing to publish all of our software updates. I've had several people work for the last year on improving the software, kind of upgrading it, getting it to run on new hardware, and all of those contributions that we've made are now open source on our GitHub as well.
I mean, I wouldn't give way too much credit to what we tend to think of as Google the entity. I think it's like some people
Googlers, right?
It's people who maybe at some point worked at Pebble, then Fitbit, and then, you know, now call themselves Googlers. I'm familiar myself with the Google like wearables team, so I can see faces in my head of who might have been part of this. And it's nice to know that sort of spirit of wanting to support this open source community good is still there.
Fantastic. Yeah.
I'm looking for hope wherever I can in this year, so I'm going to cling on to that. But tell me more about the fun stuff you can do with Pebble Round 2, not just the like, you know, fun watch faces. For anyone that maybe is not super familiar with Pebble OS, what's your favorite app?
So I have been using the Claude app. Someone wrote a Claude app for Pebble, which is good. I use an app called Music Boss, which is a third-party music app for Pebble that works with Android only, and it shows you like kind of pixelated 64-color album art
for
thing for the song that you're listening to, which
That's
is pretty
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
There's tons of, you know, fun, useful. So all the experiences for Pebble are not designed to replicate something that's on your phone, like. You know, at the time, we had an Uber app for Pebble, but that was—I don't think I used it once in my life, because you have a phone in your pocket, and Pebble's designed to be an accessory to your phone. It's not designed to be a replacement for your phone. So the best experiences, in my opinion, on Pebble are ones that are short, quick, in and out, learn something, read something, interact with something, and then get back to your life.
Yeah.
If you need to do something more, there's a phone.
Yeah.
You know. in your pocket.
I mean, and we've said before that the Pebble watches aren't trying to be the Apple Watch. I can do the Uber stuff quite well on an Apple Watch because it has like very up-to-date displays and that sort of thing. It's just a very different experience. I'm not trying to, if I were to buy a Pebble Round 2,
yeah,
I wouldn't be trying to get an Uber app on there, which to your point, you know, is how it all works. That brings me to the last point I want to make really on here because we're almost at time. Tell me more about how you see sustaining this business, right? We all love Pebble. We're so glad it's back, but we want to see it stay and yes, stick around. What's your plan for that? What's your strategy there?
A couple things. Mm. One, it's 100% open source.
Right.
Unlike last time. Last time it was 0% open source for all intents and purposes. Now the operating system is open source. We open source the mobile app. That includes the mobile app that works with Index 01 as well.
Okay.
So the entire AI stack is open source. And we did that for a couple of reasons. One is sustainability. Like for, you know, there's nothing beats the ability for you or anybody to go to GitHub to grab a copy of the software, compile it, build it, run it, and use it yourself.
Right.
That is kind of the gold standard for longevity. It's also an opportunity for the community to be part of it in a way, part of this entire kind of operation in a way that never was possible before. There's many people who have now contributed to the open source operating system. There's many people who've contributed to the app, and they're making, I hope, I haven't talked to them in depth, but like, I hope that they're making their lives better. Mm-hmm. I hope that the thing that drives them to improve and help, you know, work on Pebble is so that they get more joy in their life. And they're, you know, I'm really thankful that they're sharing it with me and they're sharing it with us. They're sharing it with all of us. And so the Pebble story, like going forward, is I think one of community, one of, you know, participation, one of being able to have some impact on a device, a gadget, something that you use every day in your life. And that's going to be special as well. I've been trying to document the process through my own podcast, and through
Let's
my
hear
blog.
It. What is the name of your podcast?
You want me to do a plug for my podcast?
Yeah, go
this
for
is the
it.
First time I've ever done a plug.
I can't wait. Do it now.
Podcast is called TikTok.
I think I saw it. TikTok.
TikTok. You can find it on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beautiful.
This is great. This is my first plug.
I will go watch it.
And so what I've done is, I've only had a couple episodes, but I've talked about how to build a smartwatch in 2025, 2026. And I kind of documented a couple of parts of the process, like how to pick the hardware that goes inside. I talked about how to pick the software. I'm planning on working one about how to pick the display. Mm. And, you know, the display is the biggest driver of cost, complexity, design, everything. Like once you pick the display, the rest of the watch kind of follows from it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about that. And we've actually published the designs for Pebble 2 Duo. Like the schematic, not only the schematic, but the KiCad files, which are the kind of project files for the schematic, are there on our website. Anyone can download them.
Anyone can download and print them themselves.
Yes, exactly. Wow. And, you know, I hope, now it's a this is more of a long-term goal, but I hope that other people build things with Pebble OS. Mm. It's a fantastic piece of software. There's nothing like it. There's no open source embedded operating system that delivers, you know, a full experience with a mobile application, with everything integrated. And so, like knock on wood, other people might build cool stuff using Pebble OS as well, which turns, you know, this watch into potentially, you know, a larger, wider ecosystem of devices.
That's what I can't wait to hear more about. And I don't know what you can share now, but I'd love to hear about like Pebble's future device types, devices. I also know, and I just want to say it for our audience who may not have read our articles on Engadget, that like you're very purposefully, you know, making your products, especially your hardware products, you know, pre-order first, or you're building them almost to order, right?
Yeah.
And so that helps with the like sustain, because you're not stocking up on inventory, you're not spending money on just making units to stock some store shelf.
And this is because I've tried that and gotten burned. So I wrote a blog post at the 10-year anniversary of our first Kickstarter.
Right.
I talk a lot about some of the factors that caused the, you know,
initial fall
of Pebble. One of them, I mean, the primary cause was inventory.
Yeah.
You know, we got burned. You know, we projected a certain amount of revenue and we built inventory to meet that revenue and we didn't make it. that hurt. And those kind of pains don't go away. Like you, you feel them viscerally for years after. Yeah. And so one of the things that we're doing here is we're, you know, trying to make this a company that can run long into the future. I love making gadgets. I love gadgets, as I think it's probably been made clear over the last half an hour.
Not very, you know. No, I'm kidding.
But, you know, it brings me joy. I love making them, and so I want to make them long into the future. And in order to do that, we need a company. You can't, you know, gadgets are one of those things that you need kind of minimum order quantities. You need to have, you know, factories. You can 3D print certain things, but you can't 3D print everything.
At scale especially, yeah.
Well, not even, it's actually, scale's easier. It's even like smaller scale is actually harder to build these things because you have tooling, you have kind of upfront costs that you need to make, so.
Right.
Like for example, I've currently commissioned a new screen to, you know, work with future watches and new screens. Oh, this is a lead into the podcast that I'm working on. So new screens take 18 months to build. It's wild.
That's wild.
For this particular type of technology. And so, like 8 months ago or 9 months ago, I started working on this new screen because I knew that in 18 months we'd want a new screen.
Yeah.
And so sustainability. So in order to make sure that the company is around long into the future, we have to make sure that we don't go over our skis in inventory. And to do that, we're asking people to pre-order.
Yep.
And if they want the product or if they think they might
want
it,
for it.
Pre-order, you know, fully refundable. You know, you can get money back if you want. But we'd like some indication, like, do people want what we're planning to make? And if people don't want it, we'll make less. And if a lot of people want it, we'll make more. But we'll know ahead of time, like, how much we need to make so that we don't get stuck in a situation where there's too much inventory.
Very last question, because we're so at time. Anything you can hint at about different categories of devices coming up for Pebble?
Yeah, so we're making devices that we want ourselves, you know, things that
headphones.
We will use on our own. Yeah, right. I have enough headphones. Things that we use on a regular basis. Oh, so there's a couple factors. Like what makes it onto the list of like gadgets that I like? I like gadgets that I use on a regular basis. I like gadgets that are affordable. I like gadgets that are designed to do one thing well. I like gadgets that aren't super complex. So like, well, and this is more about what I like to build. Expect to see things that don't take, you know, tons and tons of R&D dollars. Like we're not going to be doing like net new sensors or like things that require like 5 years worth of R&D before you see the first, you know, good example. We're going to be doing things that, you know, we can wrap up in like 6 to 12 months. Okay. And that's partially due to risk, like we don't want to put too many dollars on the line before we know that people want to buy it. But also because I want to work on a lot of things. I wanted to work on just one thing.
Right.
And, you know, you can't, we have 5 people at the company, we can't work on, you know, really complex stuff, but we can work on, you know, small,
focused,
exactly, things.
I think it's an e-reader, but that's just my guess. Thank you so much for talking to us, Eric. It was so nice. I hope we get a chance to talk some more, but if not, we'll just direct people to your podcast, TikTok, on YouTube and all your podcast channels.
Yeah, spell it correctly.
Thank you so
much.
Because
you might get something else.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. Don't. Anyway, and on that note, thanks again for joining us. We can't wait to get our review units of the Pebble devices.
I'm looking forward to hearing what you think.
Oh, yeah. If you can give us an exclusive, that would be great.
You heard it here.
He just laughed and said nothing. Thank you so much again.
Thanks,
Eric.
Chef.
Bye. Can I ask, how do I pronounce your last name?
Mijakovsky. Though, if you talk to speech to text, sometimes it says Mijawatchski.
Very interesting.
I'm joking.